Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And we're very pleased to have Jake Lumetta from Butter CMS join us. Welcome, Jake.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be on. Super excited.
Thank you for coming on.
So this came about after DjangoCon US. You and I were both having breakfast there, I think, and as one does, just said hi. Who are you? Yeah. What do you do? And you said you worked at Butter CMS, which I'd obviously heard of, and then a little bit later you said you founded it, and you told me a little bit about that story then, but hopefully we can go a bit deeper today.
Sure.
But I guess as preamble, we always like to ask the origin story of people, but maybe you can just say off the top, like, what is Butter CMS? What's a headless CMS? And then we'll get into your background and getting up to today.
Sure. So Butter CMS is, I guess the term for it is a headless CMS. I'm debatably on the fence on that term, if I'm totally honest. I like the technically accurate term, which is kind of an API first CMS. But the important thing there is we're also kind of SaaS based as well. So I like to say we're just a kind of a modern approach to CMS. So we can get into what that means exactly. But yeah, we're headless CMS.
Carlton, you're familiar with headless CMS? That also rings a bell for you.
Yeah, no. I mean, I like the phrasing as API first. I think that's captures it much better because we're headless.
Yeah, it makes more sense.
What's that? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. What are we talking about here? And why is it so violent?
I mean, do we want to just dive straight into this now? Because you've got me all excited. Or should we?
Yeah, it's a chat. Go ahead. Usual plan. Carlton, go for it.
Okay. Well, fine. So headless CMS. It's quite cool because I mean, the idea I think originally was for this kind of model was that you'd be producing applications for allow you to deploy your content to multiple platforms at the same time. So it was like when the mobile first design wave came through, when, you know, mobile phones, and then we're going to hang on, we're going to need to design our content not just for laptop screens but also these tiny screens, and then turns out, oh, actually we're going to need to stick them on 48 inch tellies or 70 inch tellies, and then we're going to need to so I mean, you know, can you perhaps riff off that? That was how I got into
things. If I'm totally honest, that wasn't Butter came about as kind of just, I mean, it is cliche, but it, you know, really kind of scratching my own pain or solving my own pain that I experienced when I was the CTO at some previous startups prior to founding Butter. And so that is to say, like, to your point, I didn't necessarily found Butter with kind of the broader vision of what you described of having kind of a multi-channel approach to being able to serve content, although that's been a wonderfully important kind of benefit of the approach of Butter, like an API first CMS. So the Butter came about when I, as I mentioned before, I was working at a previous company. We were like an energy marketplace. So you can comparison shop for different energy providers, but here in the US, I know it's quite popular overseas here, but in the US, about half the states are deregulated. So we were building like an energy marketplace, and the CMO came to me at the time and said, "Hey, Jake, you know, we need to be able to write blog posts." So the business was a marketplace like, you know, Expedia or Kayak, but for energy. And we were building in Django, which I'm super happy to say. Yeah. So been working Django for a really long time.
Hence this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're building this marketplace in Django. The whole business was the marketplace. But we needed to kind of add on CMS capability into that. And so I was like, oh, you know, I've heard of this WordPress thing. Like, that's the thing you used if you need CMS for blogs. And so let's go and do that. The one kind of catch here is that we didn't want to just, there's a few catches, but we didn't want to just like throw the blog in a subdomain because it's not really optimal for SEO. So we wanted, you know, rsite.com/blog. We didn't want just blog.rsite.com, although the latter is technically easier. You just throw it in a subdomain and let it be. So we wanted a deeper integration where parts of the URL routing, you know, the subdirectory of blog was handled by WordPress, but then everything else was handled by the Django app. And to achieve that, you know, I went on this basically this adventure of like what it takes to achieve that and what it really means to kind of set up a custom WordPress blog where, you know, we didn't want to just like kind of pick a theme. We wanted it to look nice and like branded and kind of match the rest of the company site and the colors and the fonts and the logos and like all that kind of stuff. And so we really went about this exercise of completely skinning WordPress to match our site.
Isn't that what the admins for?
An interesting question, right?
So, I'm only slightly kidding, right? Yeah. People do that though.
No. I'm not biting on that. This, how do you match a WordPress theme to the rest of the site that's built with presumably Django templates or Jinja templates or
yeah,
similar?
I mean, I outsourced that, so I didn't.
right. Yeah, you just have to make it look the same as that.
Yeah, I was like, we're focused on building the business. Like, you know, I don't know WordPress. Nothing against it. I just literally just did not know WordPress. I never worked with it before. So I hired somebody that did and kind of had them handle all the headaches. But your question is right on the nose of how, like, what does it actually take to go in? And just on this point of like making a WordPress site look like your existing company site, like what does that take and what does it mean? And even once you achieve that, and this was a learning too, you know, once we had a really great looking company branded blog on WordPress, you know, we had the header that matched and the footer that matched and the links and the menus kind of all matched. And when you click back and forth between the blog and the main site, you couldn't really tell. But that lasted for about, I don't know, 2 weeks until we like changed something in the main site, you know?
Right. And then you've got double maintenance because you're maintaining these two parallel sets of templates.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, this is not going to be easy to keep these in sync, right? And so what are your options there? One, you could just let them drift.
Hang on. Yeah. Just before you fix the problem, how did you solve the routing problem? So were you proxying from Django to WordPress, or did you have some sort of Nginx in front routing by path? Do you recall?
I don't remember offhand, to be honest. Yeah, I feel like we did some Nginx magic. Yeah, I feel like we did some Nginx magic. Yeah. You know, it's a dark place. It's a dark place. And I just kind of pushed that down, you know.
You can work it out with the therapist later.
I'm being overly dramatic here. But, you know, but these are kind of my personal pains that I went through. And these were learnings, you know, I'd never gone through it before.
But also from a business point of view, like, you know, it's all about velocity, right? It's all about, we want this change. We want to get it out quickly. And then all of a sudden you're running these two parallel implementations and you like the kind of ability to update is your velocity just sort of falls through the floor because you've got to do twice as much work for each change.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, you, it doesn't seem obvious until you've really done it. And so if you've done it, you can relate to this, but like just adopting, you know, adopting WordPress in our case, it like 2x is just the overhead kind of across the board, right? You now have like two different code bases. You have two databases that you need to worry about. You have possibly two servers, depending on how you host and run WordPress. You have just two systems to kind of keep up to date, you know, WordPress, you have to kind of keep it patched and the plugins, you have to keep those patched and that kind of thing. So it's just, it's not the end of the world, but it is quite a big like chunk to just sort of take on, you know. And again, what WordPress was doing for us was it was our blog, like, you know, that's what it was doing.
Yeah.
So it didn't really seem kind of worth all of that work, time, effort, overhead just to kind of achieve blogging when, again, our core business was like building this Django application with, you know, for our marketplace. So really insightful kind of process that I went through there.
Did you have that at a couple companies? As for research for this show, you had a couple startups, and I think you mentioned that you went in the same Django plus WordPress at more than one place, or do I have that wrong?
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, it's a little unbelievable, but it actually is true. Like, so the first startup I was at, that got acquired. We were based in Chicago. We had raised like a Series A round. That got acquired by a larger company doing the exact same thing, just a bigger plate, you know, just a bigger fish doing the exact same thing. They were also built using Django, which was just a total coincidence, but it was like, you know, from one Django to the next, doing the exact same business model, same industry, everything. And so that time around, yeah. So that company got acquired. So I'm now part of the new company, also kind of a venture backed company, larger team doing things at a bit bigger scale. Same problem came about though eventually, and we said, okay, you know, the marketing team came to the engineering team and said, hey, we need a CMS. And I said, and we want to use WordPress. And I said, no, here's what I've learned. Let's not go that route. And they said, well, what do you propose? And I was like, well, that's a good question. And so we looked around and we looked for just open source kind of Django CMSs that we can kind of plug in. Now, I personally didn't lead the project. Someone else on the team did, but and I forget the name of the one that we stumbled upon. It was not Django CMS or Wagtail or any kind of the well-known ones. It was, I think, something smaller. But, you know, from the dev team side, it plugged in beautifully. It was super easy to set up. You know, we just, you know, installed the CMS and like from a implementation standpoint, it worked great. Then we handed it over to the marketing team and we said, here's your dashboard that you use to, you know, create landing pages and upload images and resize things. And you see where this is going and they're like, like this is not, we cannot this thing. Like,
we're not using it.
Like I tried to upload an image. I lost all my work. Like how do we resize images? You know, like we can't do, just the UX was not quite there. And I was like, oh man, you know, so I thought I'd won, you know, I won the initial battle, but lost the war ultimately. So, you know, I said, let's not go with WordPress. We went the open source route because it was more dev friendly and it was great, but the marketers didn't like it. So then they ultimately came in, you know, with kind of the veto and said, we want to use WordPress. We're going to use WordPress. Like you guys had your chance. So like, we're going to go with WordPress. And that was even worse. That time around, the scope was just much bigger. But yeah,
that's such a good story. That's like, I'm just feeling that in my heart. I really am. Like, because I loathe, like, not loathe, but like I sort of historically have loathed, these kind of, constrained UIs that CMSs give you, and the kind of the way they've got the form and that you put your text in there and you're like, but I just want to add a bit here, and you can't because the page definition isn't right. And, but on the other, that's because I'm a developer and I basically just want to hand code HTML.
Right, exactly.
Like, on the other side of that, there's real people out there who want to create content, and what they want is a nice UI that, you know, gives them exactly the flexibility they want, but also the guardrails so they don't go off and you know, it's going to work totally. When they hit save.
Exactly. Yep.
So anyway,
it's interesting. You're
just fascinated.
Yeah, your level in terms of you were CTO and then you were a tech leader, but you also were feeling this pain, because I feel like, I mean, every company has this pain. Like I was at a, no matter your stack, you need a blog and you go to WordPress and it's terrible. But a lot of times the devs don't feel that pain enough, or it's not someone high enough to change it. It's more of like a low level dev kind of gets gets that, in my experience.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, fortuitous. I wonder if it's a function of size or just that you were, you know, CTO and you were still dealing with this and still cared on top of doing everything else. Because a lot of times it is, lowest in the totem pole, spin up a WordPress. In a startup environment, it's not the most seen as the most important thing.
Sure. Yeah, but just pick somebody, like, go figure it out. Yeah.
No, I mean, I remember doing this when I was, before I was technical at a startup in San Francisco, and we had, you know, every time you log in, you have to update all the packages and there's 12 third-party add-ons and it's like, seems risky and stuff's breaking.
Just roll the dice, right? Yeah, just roll the dice. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it wasn't like a CTO level concern.
It's a good point. So at the first startup, we were quite small. I think we were like 10 people. So I maybe had like myself and a couple other devs on the team. So it was a very small team. So at that point, it was just like, one of my concerns. At the follow-up company, when we went the WordPress route, we brought on a WordPress agency. So the first time around I hired just a WordPress freelancer and kind of, he just worked on the blog and you know, did a good job. But then the second time around, like I said, it was a much bigger kind of scale project at a bigger company. And so we hired in a WordPress agency, paid them quite a bit of money per year. You know, great guys, and they knew WordPress. And we just sort of kind of handed it over to them. Although we weren't able to totally hand it over to them, which is another kind of challenge here. Cause like, even if you think as an engineering leader, again, to your point, like if I'm VP of engineering, and I say, okay, I have a team of amazing Python Django engineers. Our core business is this like Django platform. Let's not bother our core team with this WordPress stuff. Let's just have an agency deal with it. Who gets called when the marketing site goes down, right? Like if you're good at negotiating, you can make it so that it's the agency that's called. But like ultimately you're on the hook, right? It's like, well, why did you hire that agency? Like, what's the deal? Like you are, you know, the buck stops with you ultimately as an engineering leader. So you can't totally sort of wave your hands and wash your hands of responsibility for the marketing site ultimately. So there was always that tension of like, you know, there's that tension there of like, okay, well, if something's slow or something went wrong, like whose fault is it? And all that kind of stuff. And who's really responsible for what?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But that gets beyond the technical challenges. It's more of a people issue, I suppose, but.
Right, but outsourcing's not just like the job disappears. It's not like it just vanishes.
Yeah.
It's still overhead.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So was it 2017 then when you started Butter CMS? And was that after you'd been at this place, or do you do it concurrently? Like, what's the origin story of Butter?
Yeah. So after going through these pains, just like it was literally like just a deja vu, you know, pain. And it was like, okay. Maybe not a full pattern, but there was two data points there. And I'm like, okay, this is, you know, this has to happen to other folks. So like,
right. And you paid money. That's the thing. It was like, you were happy to pay money. It just, the money wasn't getting what you wanted.
Totally. Yeah, totally. So you just sort of look back at those experiences and I was like, okay, well WordPress is great. You know, it's got an amazing ecosystem. Like you could do a lot of cool stuff with it, but just, you know, for that circumstance where you're not using WordPress, you know, you're building technology that's just not WordPress. If you're starting at that point and you need to add CMS capability to, you need CMS capability, then what's like how should that work? Like, what would be a really great experience there? And so I sort of just tried to sit down from first principles of like, you know, what are some of the kind of the core pillars of what would make a great CMS in my opinion, in my mind at that point in time. Right. And so that's really what led me to like some key kind of decision criteria. So, I mean, it's really not rocket science. Like the first thing is that it should be an amazing developer experience. So I started with that. And so what does that mean? You should be able to use any technology stack that you want. You should be able to add, like, you should be able to, whatever this new CMS thing is going to be, you should be able to use it with any technology stack. So like it has to work with Django. It should work with Ruby on Rails, .NET, C#, and now all these JavaScript frameworks, React, Angular, Vue, et cetera. Like, it shouldn't matter what you're using technology-wise. You should be able to benefit from this like new CMS platform, whatever that was going to be. And so I said, okay, well, that means it needs to be API-based, you know, API first. Like, it can't matter what the CMS is built in. What the actual CMS is built in should not matter in determining whether or not you can adopt it, right? And with WordPress, like, that's the case. Like, it's built in PHP. So if you want to use WordPress, you're going to be adopting PHP and you're going to need to care about like how that works and how to run that kind of a thing. So that was like one big thing. So a great developer experience, API first. Second piece, again, this is just from the learnings here. Second piece, it has to have a great marketer experience. It has to be like a really great dashboard. So that's kind of a given. Otherwise, you're just going to go through my experience of like losing that battle to the marketing team if they can't use the CMS ultimately to do their job, or if they need to keep like looping you in to get things done. That's a lose-lose anyways. And then the third piece, and again, this is a little bit unique about Butter, I suppose, but I guess in hindsight, it's not that unique anymore, but, you know, going the SaaS-based approach. So offering as a software as a service, where what that means is we host and maintain the whole CMS platform. And so that's like, we host and maintain the content dashboard, and we host and maintain and scale and secure and back up the data and the API side of things as well. So when you're adopting Butter, or when you're using Butter, it's like, and what I wanted, you know, I was like, what do I want? It's like, I don't really want to host a CMS. Like, I'm building an energy marketplace. Like, I don't really want to host I don't want to host anything new. Like, I just want to add CMS to my current like little stack. And so with Butter, you don't have to like have a new code base. There's no additional database. There's no additional servers. You just literally connect to the API and pull in content in real time into your application from Butter. So like when someone logs a blog post on your site, instead of fetching that blog post content from your own database, you just make an API call over to Butter, and Butter returns that blog post content in like a structured JSON format. It is literally just how it works. So so those are some of the kind of key design philosophies around like what I was aiming for with Butter.
I think the SaaS thing works really well as well. You know, so I, you know, freelance forever. And, you know, you're always looking for each client. You're always like, well, okay, I could host something for them. But then, you know, then you've got difficulties with
like getting a support contract from them, and you know, how's that going to work out? And it's always an awkward conversation. They never want to pay upkeep. Whereas if you can just sell them a SaaS, and it's like, yeah, no, well, you know, I'll implement it all for you, and but you know, it's going to be the SaaS, and there's your 80 bucks a month fee that, you know, and then that conversation just goes away. So I think from a sort of independent point of view, like, you know, developing for clients, that's a great model as well. It's not just like a tech company wants to a CMS, but that's not their specialty. It's agencies, it's, you know, any number of people would want that SaaS hosted solution.
Yeah, for sure. And we do see that a lot. Like, certainly a large part of our customer base and folks using Butter, you know, are freelancers and agencies, for sure. Exactly to your point. So yeah.
Okay.
Is it developers who come to you, or do you ever get marketers come to you? I mean, does the headless CMS thing throw off a marketer? It's kind of both, but like, who's the decision maker usually?
It does vary, you know, company to company, kind of project by project, team by team. Most of the time it's the developer. That's probably a function that we do a lot of marketing to developers. But you know, from time to time we do have, I say like 10 to 20% of the time, it's a marketer or like a business person or like a project manager or something like that, who kind of discovers Butter and they're trying to solve their own pain, and they see Butter and it's like, oh, this seems like a thing that, you know, our devs would like to work with. So like, they feel safe saying like, hey guys, check this out. Like, what do you think about Butter? And the devs will like come kick the tires. But at the end of the day, it usually is both, especially for like larger projects, it's pretty rare that like, it's quite common that, you know, both the marketer and ultimately the end user, whether that's a client of a freelancer or the marketing team of, you know, the company the developer works at, like they ultimately do kind of have to approve and kind of check off on Butter and saying like, yeah, this is a nice experience. We're okay working with this kind of thing.
Yeah, there's always a process of getting that agreement, isn't it? It's never quite, oh, I've decided you're using this.
Yeah, that never goes well. Exactly. Yeah.
There you are. So it's obviously built in Django, and you talked about the marketing side having that nice UI and that nice experience for the marketers. That and you that's the bit you build, right? So they can log in, they see all that, they've got the editing side of it. That's you know, that's sort of the value of that logging into Butter to edit your content.
Yeah, that's right. So that's from the marketer side, exactly as you described. So the marketers go log in and they have our dashboard. And again, the thing I love about the SaaS model is just we're able to, you're like always like using the best version of Butter always, you know, like we're able to kind of roll out changes pretty quickly. And anytime we ship a new feature, you as a customer of Butter or user of Butter, like just automatically have it like the next day you log into your account or whatever, which is, I think, a super, super cool thing. So, but yeah, so, you know, that's the marketer experience. And then the devs also log into Butter to do, if you've worked with the headless CMS before, or if you haven't, basically, you know, Butter is kind of built from the ground up to be completely kind of, the assumption is that you're sort of building up your own, what we call like content model, or, you know, we have like, you know, content types or page types and that kind of thing. So, you know, like we have a UI in Butter where you go in and you say like, okay, we want to set up, we want to add a knowledge base to our site, right? And then the first thing you do in Butter is you go use our page builder UI, which is basically a data modeling or content modeling kind of UI, where you're just like, okay, I want to add a short text field that's called a headline. I want to add a body field that's a WYSIWYG field. I want to add a date time picker for what, you know, whatever. And you just kind of go and compose your page type in Butter. And it's built with that in mind. So it's intended to be like really fast for you to do this kind of custom content modeling from the developer experience side of things.
So that's kind of like defining a Django model, right? So you go, you know, my new page type, my knowledge-based page, and I had this field, I had this. How on earth are you doing that dynamically? That's, you know.
That's the... That's what a lot of blood, sweat, and tears have been put into. Yeah, the data model behind Butter is quite interesting and generic, like behind the scenes. But, you know, we try and obfuscate all of that from you. You don't need to really worry about it. You just kind of go use the UI and it just sort of works for you. But
can you give us some sort of high level overview of that?
Sure.
You know, because we're geeky.
Let's see. Yeah. So. We have kind of like three core solutions. So one is like a plug and play blog engine. And so with the blog engine, you know, that solution really is focused on the blogging use case, as you might imagine. And so for that behind the scenes, you know, the Django model for that is probably what you would expect. It was like one of the first things that I built, that was the first thing I built, when launching Butter. It was like, you have a blog can have many blog posts, a blog post can have an author, and it can have many tags, it can have many categories. And I think that pretty much covers it. Like that, I think that's the data model for blogs. Yeah, okay. So it's probably what you would expect. You know, it works, you know, 90-95% of the time for most kind of off the shelf blogging use cases of what you need. And then this is, I guess, kind of going to evolution of Butter. So we actually just launched with the blog engine, and then we expanded into, the other two solutions we have, which are Pages and Collections. And so Pages are really focused on what we just kind of described before, like different, allowing you to launch kind of different page types. So it's super customizable. So the blog engine, I guess, also just to kind of put a point on that, the data model for that is pretty straightforward and it's not super flexible. Like you can't really customize. If you want to use our plug and play blog engine, you can't go in there and like customize things. Like the blog post is defined as a
different custom field,
right?
Or custom.
Yeah. So when you want to do customization, then that's when we really, and that's why we launched Pages and Collections. So Collections, you could think of as like tables of data, literally like a lot of concepts there, just from a data modeling perspective. So like a collection is the table, you know, the collection has what we call items. So those are like the rows in the table. We have internally, this is super, super in the weeds here, but like we have for the columns, we call those keys, or like collection item keys, kind of a thing for like what are the columns in that table. And then each row has multiple cells. So those are like the collection item values. And then the cells can have history. So we have version history. So the values can have historical values as well. So, and this is, you know, these are all things that kind of evolved over time, you know, and maybe we can speak about that too, but yeah.
But it sounds as if it's like a kind of custom page or custom collection is like a kind of lookup table from, you know, these are the keys it's got, and then you have to look up the values for the matching keys. I imagine that's quite an elaborate. I'm imagining that gets quite expensive to query quite quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, are you doing that with Django? Have you built that in the Django ORM?
Right. Yeah, it's all built with Django ORM.
So that's kind of cool.
Django REST framework. Over time, we've done a lot of performance optimizations just by necessity, you know, and it's just these things that you run into, like some new customer comes on board and they do something you had never seen before, didn't really expect, and, you know, starts throwing off some red flags and signals and alerts and that kind of thing. And you go dig into the queries of like, what the heck is the ORM? You know, what's the actual query being run here? So we've had a lot of those kind of battles of trying to track down slow queries, adding missing indexes. But caching was, you know, is like critical. I mean, we have caching, kind of at many different layers, but, it can get pretty complicated.
So I'm imagining for any given project, they've got their particular definitions, their particular content definitions in play, and then you'd have to cache the results of those fetches in order to make them perform.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest performance area for us is the API, first and foremost, just because, you know, a lot of our customers are just calling the API in real time. So that means like 100% of page views, like every page view just makes a call to the Butter API. And so if you multiply that like across all of our customers, it's a lot of API traffic. So, you know, like one thing we do at the API level, first and foremost, is we implemented a service called Fastly. It's like a global CDN. It basically sits in front of so if you've ever used Fastly or...
Since Fastly's come up, you use Fastly every single time you access the Django docs.
Very nice.
Because they are an in-kind sponsor of the Django project, and they gave us who knows how much worth of free bandwidth each month.
Well, thank you, Fastly.
Thank you very much, Fastly.
I love Fastly. They have some, if you're looking for, so Fastly is kind of, I think, a reverse varnish cache. They have a global CDN network of nodes that kind of run. And from the Butter CMS perspective, they sit in front of our application servers. So what that means is when you quote unquote make an API call to Butter, 99.9% of the time, you're actually just going to get a cached JSON payload back from like your nearest node. And so majority of traffic doesn't even hit the application server. And these response times are like really fast, you know, 50 milliseconds or less. So Fastly is huge in that regard. And then when Fastly, you know, when the cache is cold, there's not something in Fastly, then, you know, then it does actually hit the application server. And then we're in Django territory where we actually have to go and kind of serialize the pages that you're requesting, right? So you could say, hey, Butter, give me, you know, our 10 most recent blog posts, or give me the 20, kind of top knowledge base articles, right? And then the Butter has to go and kind of serialize those pages based on that page type or that custom data model that you've defined. And then it returns it just in a clean JSON format, ultimately just key value pairs. We have some more complex field types that, you know, so it's not just like a flat kind of JSON object that comes back. You can start doing some pretty complicated kind of content modeling as far as like concepts and stuff of having one page reference another page. So you have like, you know, page A references page B. And what that means is when you serialize and request page A from the Butter API, you're actually getting page A serialized along with B serialized in the same API response. So for example, that could be like showing a knowledge base article. And then at the bottom of the knowledge base article, you show like related articles or other articles that they might want to check out, that kind of a thing. So references is like one of those field types that changes the game in terms of complexity. Is like, holy cow, there's like so many more challenges just by introducing this like one additional kind of building block field type into Butter.
Okay, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, this piece, the performance and the caching at scale, which you are, is really interesting because you don't think about it when you're starting out with Django, but in a real project, this is what you spend all your time on. But can you talk about purging the cache, right? Because you warm up the cache, but like, are there some rules of thumbs? Because you don't just keep it forever for listeners who haven't done a lot with caches.
Yeah, great question. Caching, holy cow. I don't know. I was just thinking to myself, like, it'd be great to have like a book or a rule guide or something. I mean, there's a lot of articles around caching, but it's never like, you're sort of just like, my system's on fire. Like, how do I solve this? Like, what is the best way to do the caching? You know what I mean? And it's sort of like, well, it depends, you know? And it's like, okay, you gotta really kind of figure this out for yourself. But the caching strategies have evolved over time. Let's see, what could I share here? Oh, so you asked about cache purging. One thing with cache purging is, at least the strategy that we have is we aggressively cache as far as TTLs. And so we aggressively cache on TTL length. So we kind of try and cache forever. And then when you, let's say, go publish a page, like you update your homepage in Butter, then we try and do like precise kind of cache purging so that it doesn't like overly like clear the cache out. Like it shouldn't clear the cache for content that wasn't really impacted.
Right. Like like if you're using Cloudflare, you can do purge it all, or you can do custom.
Yeah, exactly. So with Fastly, actually, that was one of the reasons why we went with Fastly in earlier. They have this concept of surrogate keys. I'm not sure if Cloudflare does or not. I'm sure they have something similar, but the concept of surrogate keys where it's like just a little string identifier. You could have multiple kind of string identifiers that you pass in the header that you return from your application server. And then Fastly kind of just strips that header out and stores that and associates that array of keys to that cached data, whatever it is, JSON. So if you go update your homepage in Butter, you click the publish button, we will, for us, there's that we have both memcache in the application level. So we have memcache things that we need to go clear out, but then we also go and clear out Fastly at the kind of the CDN level as well. So we kind of have multiple pieces of the cache to clear out. So that's, you know, that's interesting kind of fun challenge. But then there's like when you clear the cache, so like when you update your homepage, you go clear the cache out of Butter. At one point, we would just say, okay, clear the cache and our job is done. And then the next time you request your homepage, it will just go right raw to the application server, you know, and the application server will serialize your homepage, JSON data in real time. And, you know, maybe it takes 5 seconds and like that's, it is what it is. But then like after that, it's kind of, it's cached, right? And so for a while that worked out okay. But then we were like, well, how can we even get rid of that? How can we get rid of that delay? And so now we do pre-warming of the cache. So we'll actually, when you update your homepage, we'll in the background pre-serialize your homepage. And then once that pre-serialization is done, we'll stuff that into the cache. And then we'll go clear Fastly. So then the next time you have an API call, like the cache is never cold, basically, is what we try to achieve.
And that's brilliant, because by the time you switch browser tabs from editing it and you go, right, I'll go back and I'll reload it to see if it's that, it's kind that's of, all exactly. happened. And it's like, oh, wow, it's
yeah,
instant.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. It's kind
well,
of
that's like, I think Instagram's hack, one of its Django-based hacks back in the day is when you loaded a picture, as you it like immediately started uploading it, even as you were typing out the information around it. So it felt faster than all the other clones at the time. But that's just because they were just slamming your cell data, which you had to pay for, but you couldn't really see it. But that was one of their tricks.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I mean, it's not really strictly a caching thing, but it's kind of like things happening and it feels faster.
Feels fast, right?
Even if it's not necessarily.
That's a great example. But, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, we should get Frank Wiles from RevSys on to, if he can. He's anecdotally told me a whole bunch of Instagram stories of scaling stuff they had, where it was like the two of them, and they were just like I think they blew up the I can say this. There's like the number of users you can have in Postgres. They like had so many that they were like hitting all these weird edge cases because they were just Django and Postgres starting out.
Okay. We use Postgres as well.
I wanted to ask, so it's Postgres, and are you, I believe he says on the site, you're on Heroku AWS, is that, what's the hosting piece?
Yeah, we use Heroku to run the application servers, we use and Heroku Postgres for the database.
Yeah, managed DBs. Managed.
We use Redis, Memcache.
How are you feeling about Heroku? Can I ask that publicly?
Sure. Yeah.
There's some, I mean, you know, it like, because I've been spending all this time just with my books, but like, I think everyone at scale is kind of like, okay, like, yeah, I've been paying, I'll pay. It's, it works really well. But if Salesforce is going to come in and, nuke it, that'd be nice to have a heads up more than the 2 months they gave like free projects.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, it's been a tough period to be a Heroku customer. I actually had the fortunate opportunity to talk to the guy who's running Heroku now. I think his name is Bob Wise. And I was asking about this. This was after like the security breach, because that was like really painful. We had to go rotate all our keys and stuff like that. I think we weren't impacted, but you know, it was just a lot of noise and headache and not funness. He had a lot of good things to say. He has a lot of experience. He came from AWS. He was running their, I think it was Kubernetes division. Which I think he said it was like larger than the whole Heroku team or something like that. You know,
just internet
like,
scale. Just it's massive. Actually internet
yeah,
scale.
It's like massive. Yeah. So I think they have a good lead, and he's pretty new there, at least to Heroku. So they've got a great guy, I think, you know, in place there. He said, you know, he's gonna be focused on security, reliability, and kind of platform stuff. So I think as far as the Heroku roadmap, if you're And I'm just, this is totally my opinion. I don't actually have any insight or anything like that. But my sense is that they're going to be focused on just like uptime and security, which, you know, that's pretty darn important if you're using Heroku. And so I'm glad to hear that. But if you're expecting like a bunch of kind of fancy new whiz bang features, I would not be kind of expecting that. Now, here's the thing. I have looked at some of the alternatives. I haven't tried them. But, you know, I definitely have kind of started poking around, and you know, I just saw a lot of kind of coming soon kind of things that Heroku already has baked in.
Well, the managed database, like, not to name names, but a bunch of the interesting ones don't have that yet. Like, they've been saying that. And it's like, well, it's a little hard. I think it's harder than maybe it seems at first, because it's a big thing to be like, it's not managed for you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can go to Crunchy Data. We're gonna have
Crunchy Data.
We're gonna have Craig on in a couple weeks. But
okay, yeah, I spoke.
You know, they
Craig,
they
yeah.
have a post. Yeah, I mean, he's great. Like, but you know, these places have Postgres, but it's not managed for you. So it's a little like, how much can you trust it? To your point about it just being coming soon, and a whole host of other services that Heroku already has
exactly
baked in.
It's been really insightful, actually. I mean, it really has blown my mind. Like, wow, Heroku is they were just so far ahead of like the curve. And I mean, and they still kind of are, even though a lot of this stuff has existed for, I don't know, Craig will know, but you know, many, many years.
It's been around. You will know.
Yeah. Which is just like, I think a real testament to like that Heroku team. Like they really cranked out a lot of stuff. I mean, working with databases in Heroku, I will say like Heroku Postgres is pretty darn magical. Like I'm not a DBA by any means. And just my experience of, you know, they automatically maintain your database. You know, it's easy to like upgrade to a larger tier. You know, I was actually chatting with Craig when we were writing this, some database performance issues and stuff. And he's like, you should just get a bigger database. I'm like, okay. And then, you know, I was like, well, what is that like? You know, how do we do that without any downtime? Cause that's the thing with Butter. I mean, there's a lot of pros to SaaS, but like running a SaaS is tough because you can like not have any downtime, like zero downtime. Because if the API goes offline, then our customer sites go offline. So it's like zero, like literally zero downtime is what we aim for. So, so we had to do like kind of a live, production database upgrade, and the Heroku made that a much less painful process as far as kind of just setting up the follower in the background and getting all the data set to sync and then just promoting it and just kind of having it all work. So anyways, long story to your question, but I'm still pretty happy. Yeah. With Heroku. I think they do a lot of things really well.
No, I'm happy to hear that. I mean, Carlton has Button that's coming out and, you know, there are new things, but I don't think anyone wants Heroku to go away. And it seems like they've got two people at scale too. So,
but I think they've just like Button's not looking to be a platform as a service, so it's not really looking to compete with Heroku. It's but I think the thing with Heroku is they've just Salesforce have said, look, we just don't want this free traffic anymore. This free traffic is worth zero to us, and we don't want it, and we're going to get rid of it. And from a business, as sad as that is, from a sort of, you know, the community built lots of sites around Heroku for many years, from a business perspective, it kind of makes sense. It's like frees them from a massive load of costly traffic to then focus on their core business. It might actually do Heroku a world of good to be free of this free plan, which is sort of...
That's a good point, yeah.
They built upon for so long.
It is a really good point. I mean, yeah, if you're a fan or want to see Heroku succeed, it's a great point that you raise. Yeah, totally. Because I think those free plans were a lot of noise. I think it's where the majority of the fraud and you know, kind of not great behavior took place were on those free plans. And so if they can just kind of, yeah, get rid of all of that, then yeah, it's a great point that you raise.
Can I ask you about high availability? Because you just said you can't have zero downtime, like literally zero downtime. And a lot of people, if they have a couple of minutes of downtime while they update, it doesn't really matter. They could be down for all night and it doesn't matter. You know, there's no real cost. But in your case, no, it really does matter. So can you just give a very high level sort of, what do you do for high availability? Like multi-region, multi-this, multi-that, multi...
Yeah, so multi-region, caching, like I said, the Fastly does help as well. So, you know, in theory, and we really aggressively cache too. So I mentioned before, you know, we don't have like short TTL. So we try to aggressively cache, and we try to precisely purge the cache. And that has some pros and cons, I guess, just to kind of dive into caching strategy maybe a bit as well. Like the con of aggressively caching, when I say aggressively caching, I mean like max TTL. Like it should never expire. The pro of that is that it never expires. So it's like great for performance and such. The con of that is that if you don't get your caching right, then the customer does not get updated data. And so, you know,
if you accidentally cache a Rick Astley image, that's
someone's banging on the like update save button in Butter, and it's just like not updating the site.
Still yeah, Rick Astley.
Exactly. So that's that's been I wouldn't say a major challenge, but like that's been, you know, it has been a thing that we've kind of had to fight with just based on that design decision. The pro though is that in theory, you know, if Heroku completely went down, you know, for 30 minutes or an hour, something like that, it's possible that you would not even notice it if you're fetching content from the Butter API, because it's all cached in the Fastly layer. So that's a big benefit.
I guess a lot of content sites, they're kind of very much more read heavy than they are write heavy. Like there's many more reads than there are writes.
Yeah, way, yeah. So, okay. Yeah.
So, okay. And then I guess the one I'd like to sneak in there is about upgrades and database migrations. Mm. Like, so, you know, you've got to upgrade your Django application. You know, 4.2 comes out, you want to upgrade to 4.2. That, you know, do you have a rolling process there?
Yeah, we try and stay, I mean, certainly within LTS, you know, within the LTS band, we actually, yeah, just went, I think we're on 3.2 now. That's definitely top of mind. We try and stay up to date for sure within the LTS band. And we don't try not to push it too close to the edge where it's like, you know, we're switching over like the day before it falls out. We stay on top of security. I mean,
you've got a nice window,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. We definitely try and stay, we do stay on top of, kind of maintaining and updating the latest Django versions and such. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have more, Carlton? I feel like you've got a lot of questions today.
Well, no, I mean, I could talk for literally forever.
Great questions. You asked about database migrations, anything you know, you wanted me to talk about there?
Yeah, well, okay, yeah. Well, so like, because this is the big challenge is, you know, if I'm going to make a schema change and my little site, it doesn't really matter if, you know, I run the migration, the site might be down for a minute or two, no one's really going to notice. But if you can't really have downtime, then you've got to think, you've got to structure your migrations a lot more carefully. Have this kind of, you know, add the field, migrate the data, remove the old field, you know, multiple steps, that kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you nailed it. That's pretty much it. Yeah, exactly. So we had those kind of conversations. Heroku has a nice feature, and I'm forgetting what it's called. It's like zero downtime deploys or something like that. It's got maybe a bit of a more slick name than that, but. So that's something we're taking advantage of.
Oh, it's pre-boot.
Pre-boot. Thank you. Yeah. So it's pre-boot, where, it's zero downtime. I guess I mentioned that because, for most of our deploys, you know, they don't have a database migration involved. If they do have one that is backwards compatible, then it's fine to use it as well. It's when you get into one that's not backwards compatible, that you have to like kind of disable that and sort of work around that. But, in general, you know, like some of the decisions and kind of sort of logistics, I guess, of doing some of the database migrations are things that we work through.
So you have SDKs for all the different like languages and frameworks. How many are you up to now? Did I hear 30 something?
Oh, geez.
Am I making that up?
Let's see. Yeah,
it's a lot.
buttercms.com/docs. I always have to count the bubbles. 3, 4, 12, 24, 28. Ish 27, 28, something like that.
Okay,
yeah.
Close, but a lot.
We'll call it 30. Yeah, it's a lot, yeah. The first one, by the way, just the first bubble on there was Django. The very first one. The second one was Rails. So this goes way back. But Django was the first bubble, followed by Rails. Yeah.
Okay, so two questions. One is, so if I'm, this is a Django chat podcast, if I'm on a Django site, I would think most people look at Butter and you look at Django CMS and Wagtail. The other ones, like, you can't use those as easily. What's the quick pitch for like what those don't offer that Butter does for someone listening who's a dev or a marketing person like with this need?
Sure. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's some differences in features and such. I won't kind of wax on about that. I think in terms of a fundamental difference is that Butter is SaaS versus, like an open source kind of software that you install into your project. And so, again, for some people, if you want to, like, you cannot self-host Butter. So like if that's a mandate where you have to
that's interesting.
Run the whole CMS platform and you need the CMS data to be in your servers and like that kind of thing, then like Butter's not going to be a good fit. So I would say, you know, go with the other systems. But if you are, if you're like our customers or our users who like don't want to run a CMS or don't want to adopt any additional source code or software, or if you don't want to run any part of the CMS, if you don't want to worry about scaling it, if you don't want to have to worry about backing up the data, you know, I kind of will go on and on about the list of SaaS things, putting my sales hat on there, but like that is like the reason why you know, when I founded Butter, I made it to be SaaS. It's like, it's going to be for those folks who like kind of value, who value that stuff basically. But yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's very sensible to give yourself a clear demarcation like that.
Yeah.
You know, because if you were to think, oh, we'll make it installable, you can install your own, then you're kind of, you know, going head to head.
Then it's, yeah, that's a whole new game.
Wagtail,
yeah,
or Dang CMS. It's, yeah, like, oh,
you know, and I'd be lying if I said we had considered it. I would say we haven't strongly considered it, just because I've asked around and it's like, it's just a totally different, from a business perspective, and there's operations and customer support and that kind of thing. It's a totally different game. So yeah, I mean, with the SaaS model, it's nice, just because, I mean, from our perspective, being able to provide great service, you know, that's part of it too. We haven't really talked about that. Like, we talked about the tech stuff, but like, if you use Butter, then, you know, anytime you're logged into Butter, or even like trying to install Butter or get it set up, like, we have a little chat bubble on the site, and it, you know, it's real people there who will chat with you and kind of help you and provide you support throughout the entire process, whether it's like during the initial kind of dev setup phase, or once you've handed it over to your client or your marketers and they're having trouble, you know, getting an H2 tag to work, or whatever it is, you know? So we're there to give support kind of throughout the entire process. And that's just baked into the service.
So I have one more. I wanted to ask, so you were at DjangoCon and Butter had the nice notebooks. I've got mine right near here.
Awesome.
How was that experience for you? And what do you think, like, Django can do better on corporate sponsors? This is something Carlton and I have things we're working on, but, you know, both as an attendee and then as a sponsor, like, what could Django do better?
Jeez. So attending DjangoCon was awesome, like, way overdue for me on a personal note. Like, I've been working in Django forever, I don't know why I haven't gone to DjangoCon sooner. So that was both the first time I attended DjangoCon, and it, you know, also happened to be as a sponsor. So yeah, we'll definitely go back next year. Looking forward to that. So it was a great experience. A lot of the name, just putting names to faces to names, a lot of the folks had just been in conversations with already. And so it's great to, you know, I've, you know, come across you guys on the interwebs and such. And now it's, you know, great to get to meet you in person. And here we are, right? Due to that. So it was really awesome, really awesome time. What could DjangoCon?
Yeah. Like, are there other, I mean, I don't know, Rails, like, is there a framework that, I mean, it often feels like some of these, like Vue, are more corporate friendly because of their structure. So I'm just curious if there's any blatantly obvious thing. Carlton and I have our own list, but as a sponsor, you're like, oh yes, I would bump up a tier or give more if Django gave me XYZ.
Gotcha. I don't have a great list there. I think as far as, I mean, I don't know if this is contentious or not, but, you know, like, as far as sponsoring, getting corporate sponsors for, I'm just loading up the Django site here. So, like, you know, DjangoProject.com, you know, if we were open to the idea of maybe being a bit more aggressive with showing sponsored logos or something like that, somewhere on the site or throughout the docs. I've seen other kind of more newer frameworks do that. Again, I don't know where that falls on the okayness spectrum. But if we're talking like if the end goal here is just to like increase dollars, then I think that could be something there too, of just like, hey, put your logo here. And it's just like, no matter what page you're on in the Django docs, it doesn't have to be like obnoxious or anything like that. There are some frameworks that I think do it pretty well. That could help drive some dollars, I think.
Carlton, what do you want to add on this?
I think
we've talked a lot about
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing we've said to each other loads and loads and loads of times, and we've probably said in the podcast a billion times, but we'll say it again, is, you know, if you're a corporate sponsor, you kind of have to dig around to find you do get your logo on the fundraising page, but you kind of have to dig around to find that logo. And it's like, you know, you can see why companies are a bit like, wow, what? You know, I kind of think we should be a bit more forthcoming with, you know, front and center, hey, these companies are really going out of their way to, you know, support the framework, and we say thank you.
But there are things afoot, Carlton. I don't think we can announce anything publicly yet, but there's actually things happening around.
There's lots of talk. Oh, so
lots of awesome. Talk. I think awesome. Things will happen. I mean, you know, at a minimum, making the fundraising page look better, the sidebar, why not have corporate sponsors there, you know? And then the homepage is maybe a separate discussion, but there's a lot we could do and will do, especially if we need to. But anyways, we've gone on. We talk about that enough on the podcast, I think.
I mean, so Jake, were you at DjangoCon hype because you were hiring or just to raise awareness?
I guess a bit of both. Yeah, maybe a triple thing. Yeah, one is raise awareness of Butter. I mean, really one is just I've been a Django dev for forever, so just getting in the community and meeting folks. And then two was, yeah, now that running a Django company, I guess, of sorts, then getting awareness of Butter from a customer perspective, but then also recruiting. So I mean, I guess on that front, we are hiring, so I'll just put that out there. But you heard our stack, I guess. We're Django company. We do use Vue.js on the front end. I don't think we've covered that. But we used Vue.js in our dashboard experience to kind of just make it more interactive and lively. So, but those are the kind of the two things, the two core technologies we use in our stack.
And are you going to keep that, or are you going to switch all to HTMX? Because that's what all the talks are about.
Right? We're sponsoring HTMX. We actually just became a sponsor of HTMX.
Oh, good.
Actually hearing about it at DjangoCon. Seem to have a lot of love at DjangoCon. I'm a little bit behind in the HTMX train, but I'm trying to catch up quickly here.
Well, we had him on this podcast, so he gave his full spiel, but.
Oh, very nice. Okay. I'll have to check that out. Let's see.
Yeah. It was, I think 2 years ago, Carson.
Okay. 2 years ago. Okay. So yeah, he's been at it for a little
something
while.
Like that. But I agree that I think it's nice. You have templates, HTMX, and then you can go to Vue and these others, and there's a nice on-ramp and you can mix and match. So it's
right.
I think when you're learning full stack, you just feel like I'll never get who's full stack, but you don't really have to be truly full stack, maybe as much thanks to HTMX as you would before.
Right. Totally. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Oh, Carlton, we're sort of at time. We'll put a link to your hiring page. Are there any last questions or things you wanted to mention, Jake?
I don't think so. Just really thank you guys for having me on. This was a great chat. A lot of great questions. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for digging down. I know, you know, it seems like, do we need to get into those details? No, those details are exactly what we're okay. after. Those.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. We're unapologetically technical here because we can be.
Yeah, for sure. Well, hopefully I was able to give some color. I guess the one thing is like, yeah, give some color behind the scenes of like scaling a CMS, I guess, you know, it conceptually is very simple to say like, yeah, I could just go build a Django app that like is a blog or whatever. And totally, you know, selfishly I'll say like, please don't do that. Like, just don't do that. You know, like that's why Butter exists. Like we're trying to save you from that. Because then,
yeah. No, but this is a joke. Like, cause when you were talking about your WordPress experience, I'm like, but surely you just did what every Django developer does, write their own blog.
Exactly, right? I mean, you like, heard the blog. Yeah. Like it's not that complicated, but it's just, you know, it just is the beginning of a very long path of you being on the hook for building a great like blogging experience that you're hopefully, you know, your clients and your marketers will like constantly have requests for, feature requests and you know, all this kind of stuff, which is what we spend full time doing now. So anyways, but yeah, hopefully some of the caching.
And you're bootstrapped, right? We didn't get a chance to ask that, but you're bootstrapped,
yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is even more impressive.
Yeah. So yeah, we're completely bootstrapped. We haven't raised any outside funding. So yeah, it's just been a really great journey.
Good. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on. From my perspective, it's really great to, you know, there's lots of companies out there that are using Django at a higher scale, but it's nice to talk to them because in the sort of scope of all projects, it's a very small percentage of all Django projects that need to scale that, you know, to that bigger level. So it's really nice to get that inside story.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's been a lot of learning, fun, it's been a great journey. So hopefully I've shared some tips and insights to folks that are helpful. I really hope it's helpful to other folks out there.
Thank you again, Jake. We are DjangoChat.com. We are, for now, ChatDjango on Twitter. Who knows how long that'll be around, but we have to set up a Fastodon, instance server? What do you call it? Anyways.
I don't know. Account.
Okay. People know where to find us. So thank you again. We'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.